This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On today's episode, I talk with Rebecca J. Sanford about her debut novel, The Disappeared. In 1976, Buenos Aires, Lorena Ledesma and her husband are taken from their home by the paramilitary. Their two-year-old is left behind and cared for by his grandmother, Esme. Desperate to locate them, Esme begins a relentless search for them that spans three decades and brings the novel to the year 2005. In the United States, Rachel Sprague is an American adoptee who one day learns she has a biological brother living in another country. After taking a DNA test, even deeper secrets begin to emerge and threaten to reveal painful family secrets. How will the stories from Buenos Aires and New York City merge and bring to light all that has been lost over the years? I spoke to author Rebecca J. Sanford about her novel, The Disappeared. Can you just set the table for us a little bit with a summary of this novel? And in that summary, I imagine you'll give us a little bit of the context about the dirty war and this dictatorship that was going on in Argentina in the 1970s.
So The Disappeared is a historical fiction novel. It's my first novel. It's dual timeline, and it's set partially in Argentina in the late 1970s and partially in New York City nearly three decades later for a contemporary storyline. And it follows the story of a young mother and her husband who are torn from their home in the middle of the night by the government military in Argentina. And their two-year-old son is left behind with his grandmother, Esme, and there's no record of the arrest, which was not uncommon during this period of history in Argentina. And so Esme is left to search for her daughter and her son-in-law while caring for her young grandson. And in doing so, she joins together somewhat reluctantly with a group of other mothers who are in a similar predicament, and they launch an underground search for their missing children. And in the contemporary storyline, nearly three decades later, we follow the story of a young woman named Rachel who was adopted as she learns that she may have a biological brother from a country that she's never visited. And she wants to pursue this possibility and take a DNA test. But in order to do so, she first is forced to confront the possibility that her adoptive parents have been keeping some devastating secrets. And the two storylines intertwine, and it's based on a real period of Argentina's history, a military dictatorship that took place between 1976 and 1983. And it's inspired by a group of grandmothers called the Grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, who I had the great privilege of working with when I was a graduate student in international affairs in Argentina.
So where did this idea come from? So you were doing your graduate work there. Did that seedbed for this novel take hold?
Absolutely. So I had studied languages and creative writing in my undergraduate work, and I went on to study international affairs, and I knew that I was interested in writing my master's thesis about women on the international stage, particularly as it pertains to cultural healing post-conflict. My thesis advisor at the time, who was the program director at the International Affairs Program at the New School in New York City, told me about this group of grandmothers, the Grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, and he said, I think you should learn more about them. And I had limited exposure to Argentina's history. I had read Imagining Argentina in literature courses in undergraduate, and my father is a military veteran in the U.S. Army, and so I had some U.S. military history knowledge and context, but I had not known about the military dictatorship in Argentina, which, as you mentioned, is sometimes referred to as the Dirty War. And my thesis advisor gave me a book called A Lexicon of Terror by Marguerite Feitlowitz, and that was the first book I ever read. I was 25. About the military dictatorship, and it focuses on the language used in the military dictatorship, like the Dirty War, for example, and the power of language. Another example is the term The Disappeared. And so I was enthralled by this and decided straight away that I wanted to do my master's thesis fieldwork and research with the grandmothers. And I had an opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, to go to Argentina and work for the identity archive of the grandmothers. And I worked alongside children of disappeared parents and was able to participate in very rich interviews with the grandmothers and mothers and family members of the disappeared and federal judges, activists, artists, and it was incredibly rich, and it inspired me to write this book.
That's just amazing. So you take all of these real elements and all of this real history, very real people and situations and relationships and tragedies, and you create The Disappeared, a novel, a historical fiction. And you created Lorena and Jose, and then Esme and Matias and Claudio. Can you talk a little bit about, without spoilers, of course, but whatever you can share about the couple of Lorena and Jose? You take us through, in that part of the narrative, these very, very dark experiences of people who end up being the disappeared, these people who were kidnapped and, I would guess, in most instances, tortured and just taken away from their families forever. Can you talk a little bit about your particular characters?
Yeah, the characters came to me in two ways. I've always loved creative writing and using writing as a tool to sort of explore my own emotions and my own understanding of the human experience. And I had this tremendous opportunity in my research to hear firsthand stories from mothers of adult disappeared children and children of disappeared parents who at the time who are my age of my generation and at the time were young adults. And they had some memories in some cases of being a young child and having remembering their parents and flashes of their parents having been there. And in most cases with the students that I worked with, they had parents who were taken when their mother was pregnant. And so they were in search of a missing sibling. And with the mothers of the disappeared, of course, the grandmothers that I worked with, they remembered clearly and were able to recount the time and the circumstance. And it just ignited so much in my imagination. And so there were many different stories that were generously recounted to me that fueled the inspiration for these characters in the historical timeline. And the other piece of kind of the creation of these characters is the contemporary timeline, which for me was really wrestling with the understanding of what it must be like for many of these adult children who were my contemporaries who had been identified, but they had been raised most often in good faith by adoptive parents with no knowledge of their biological identity, and to understand that where they came from, where they thought they had come from, or what they hadn't known was something that they had to kind of go through in this discovery process as a young adult. Was something I was fascinated with. So that experience of the reappropriated grandchild was the character study that I really did with the contemporary storyline and the North American point of view, because I am not from Argentina. And so all of my research was coming from a different perspective. And I really wanted to explore that as well.
And it's incredible to think that some of those women who were kidnapped and taken in by the junta, if they were pregnant and had their babies while they were imprisoned, those babies were taken away. And in some cases then were, as you say, were adopted in good faith by other parents, by other people. In some process, the contemporary storyline that involves Rachel is one, again, that emerges from this story with its roots in Argentina. And as you say, it's in New York City. It's so interesting to me that we can see someone from your generation, as you say, so alive and so clearly in this particular storyline, because I think a lot of people don't know about this part of history. I think it's something that we don't really hear about too much. And there might be a documentary or you might know something about it. But I think generally, I've encountered a lot of people who just don't know about it. Has that been your experience too?
It has. Yes, I agree. I think it's largely undertaught North America. That was part of what compelled me to continue to tell the story. I was so inspired by the work of the grandmothers. And as you mentioned, this experience of grandchildren being found and all the work that the grandmothers have had to do over the decades to make that possible, to identify your own biological identity as a stolen baby child. They really had to overcome obstacles of the limitations of genetic testing, international law, and amnesty laws that protected members of the military, and they did so, over the course of many decades. So just the work of the women and the grandmothers to make it possible to kind of bring biological families back together again was really inspirational for me. And there were, as you mentioned, the children that there are about approximately 500 cases of babies born in captivity or children that were taken along with their parents who were then put up for adoption in varying circumstances, but in many cases in good faith, and often to friends and family of the military dictatorship or military families themselves. And as of today, the grandmothers have found and identified 137 of them, but there are still many others that have not yet discovered their biological identity. And it is still very much alive. I think the concept of that generational trauma and healing is also something that intrigued me, and the important role that women and mothers play in that was very interesting to me as well.
Esme, the character of Esme is this mother of Lorena in sort of in search of her daughter and her son-in-law, grandmother to Matias. And then suddenly she's an abuela. She's part of the grandmother group. It's very interesting to me the differentiation between the mothers of Plaza de Mayo and the grandmothers. I mean, it's a very different kind of group, it feels like. And I was thinking about this and I thought, well, it stands to reason if Esme's daughter is gone, that she becomes the grandmother, not just forever waiting for her daughter to come back, but then in this case, waiting to hear anything about a granddaughter, a grandbaby. And it's just so interesting to me, this whole idea of how they would put the nappies on their heads to be able to identify each other, often with the name of the missing, of the disappeared, embroidered. It was a whole very organized thing, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And both groups, that's exactly spot on what you're mentioning is the difference between the two. And most of that is rooted in the stakes that the two separate groups had at the time. So the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo formed and were adamant about finding the truth and the whereabouts of their children. Those mothers who discovered that they had grandchildren out there somewhere had different stakes and needed to navigate that differently. And so the abuelas that formed their non-governmental organization, which started in 1977, have been pursuing a different type of search all of these years, also for truth and also for justice in some sense, but really rooted in family and bringing together their grandchildren and in some cases the children that they raised as represented in my fictional story.
And some of the research that you did also takes us into the work of paternity testing and the work of geneticists. And also, Mary Claire King, Dr. King, this was a real person, right?
She's an American geneticist. And this is one of my favorite parts. There's so many things that the grandmothers were instrumental and really quietly so, but very involved in changing the course of history in a number of ways. But genetic testing was one of them. This was all in the late 1970s and early 1980s when paternity testing with blood was just becoming something that was mainstream that you would hear about. And of course, it was necessary to have the parents in order to perform that type of test. So the grandmothers were faced with this challenge of not only finding and, searching for and finding their grandchildren, but then identifying and proving that the grandchildren were theirs biologically. And so they did a tremendous amount of work with international outreach to human rights organizations, and they worked with American geneticist Dr. Mary Claire King, who was from Stanford. At the time, she was one of her career milestones was she was one of the geneticists who helped discover the BRCA gene associated with breast cancer, but she did quite a bit of human rights work as well. And her human rights work, notably with the abuelas, was to create this test where you could prove a familial relationship between a child and its maternal relatives, maternal grandmother specifically, without the parents' blood or DNA available. And she did that by exploiting mitochondrial DNA, which is a type of DNA that we all have, but we inherit it exclusively from our mothers. And so it was just a very interesting course that the grandmothers navigated with genetics out of pure necessity to create this test. And then, of course, they had many other obstacles in obtaining DNA samples from the children and legal obstacles, et cetera. But that's one of my favorite accomplishments of the grandmothers that I think is really interesting. And
It's so fascinating. And I was thinking about how the novel traces so many lines based on historical fact. Just as you say, there's so many interesting elements that are based on true things, real things, facts, history. And as a novel, it's riveting. Like the things that you were able to create from whole cloth, these characters, this relationship, and Claudio, and so on. So riveting. You just fall into this novel. You don't even really, I think you maybe you don't need to have all this background and context, but you kind of just learn it. M somehow magically moving through the book, you can piece these things together. I don't know. It's alchemy. I don't know how you did it.
Oh, well, thank you. That's wonderful to
But
hear.
I wonder how, if you're still in touch or are there still family members out there searching for these disappeared? And how you think a novel like this, your book, will speak to them?
Yeah, that's a really important question, I think. For me, I love fiction writing and I love the process, like you, of going through and creating these characters and letting them take me where they will. And you want that to be very well informed. But as a reader, I always love reading books that open little doors for me and make me curious about other things. And this story is one little fiction story, but I do hope, and I've tried to set the stage too for readers, that it will make them curious about the history. And in the book, I provide a recommended reading list in the author's note. And there is so much material out there from people who are far greater experts than I in this subject matter. But the grandmothers do continue to search today. And they have, again, amongst all their accomplishments, helped to create a national commission for the right to identity in Argentina, genetic data bank. And this is my understanding is that this is very relevant discourse even today in terms of whether that preservation of memory and identity should continue, and how important it is. So I hope that readers will learn a little bit more about that search, and you can certainly, anyone can access the information about the grandmothers today. They are a non-governmental organization. They continue to search for their adult grandchildren who are Generation X, born between 1976 and 1983, elder millennial at this point. I do hope that there will be some curiosity and a little bit of door opening to the real history and to works by people who are very, very close to the history.
Rebecca Sanford, thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it. What an honor to get to talk to you.
Likewise, thank you so much, Yvette. It's so great to be here. Thank you again for having me.
Rebecca J. Sanford is the author of The Disappeared. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Write to us at bookpublic@tpr.org. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.